just an overall comment, not specific to you because you're not the only one. But there are a great number of residents of this city who are engaged and active and participatory in this government who are not citizens. And when we talk about citizen involvement or citizen engagement or citizen advisory committees, it may in fact encourage people to self-select out because they don't think they can participate. So I would just encourage us to be conscious of the language we use, either as relates to community members or residents of the city and who we serve. So just a comment to that.
Chief, you raise, so one of the things that we talk about in our review is the potential to look at peak staffing for the RRB program. And you raise in your slideshow some concerns about that. And you know, one of those concerns is that it reduces on-duty staffing for the remainder of the day. But I'm just curious, you know, in our review on page 12, you know, Christy's sort of outlined data from your shop, of course, you know, citywide response reliability. And when you look at that time frame from 8 a.m. until 3 or 4 in the afternoon, reliability is bad. I mean, it's below 85% in a lot of cases, whereas the rest of the time, it's closer to what your target is, which is 92%. So even though doing peak staffing may reduce response reliability the rest of the day when it's better, wouldn't it improve it when it's worse, and isn't that a good use of existing resources?
What it does
reallocation of existing resources.
And it's very tricky because what it does is it improves resources for lower acuity calls. And so if you have a lot of higher acuity calls, it doesn't really make a difference. And as a matter of fact, it may take more resources out of service because there's a higher acuity call and they're recalling more resources for that, even if it's a medical call. It's a good point. I think it needs to be studied thoroughly, and if it does have any impact, though, because it will absolutely reduce the staffing available in the off hours, and because of that, we would have to do that thorough study, and it very may well likely require collective bargaining that we need to be very conscientious of. But I was hoping you were going to ask more about the Gresham RRB peak hour that I was proposing.
Nothing to ask.
Huh? Nothing to ask?
But absolutely talk about it.
Okay, because I think that holds a fantastic opportunity for the city. As I think everybody knows, Station 31 is located at 1927 Southeast 174th. It is the busiest single company in the station. They respond to over 4,200 calls there. We have desperately, for the past 5 years, probably needed to add an additional resource there, at least an RRV, if not a truck, but we have not been in a position to add. We currently may have a fantastic opportunity to expand our partnership with Gresham, where right now we staff two of the three shifts and operate the engine, and on that third shift, Gresham firefighters respond to the station, and they respond on the same fire engine and take that 24-hour period for us, because that engine really kind of we respond about 60% of the time into Portland, 65% of the time into Portland, and the other remaining time, 35% of the time, into Gresham. And so it's a really fantastic split of sharing a resource. We have an opportunity now to potentially partner with Gresham, do a similar staffing with an RRV, and operate an RRV to help improve response to the community there. I think that normally an RRV will cost somewhere between $600,000 and $700,000. With our portion, Portland's portion, it would be somewhere around a little over $400,000 for that. But what we're proposing is that we try and we do an analysis with, let's put it into operation peak hour, let's run it 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And if there is overtime to relieve in the evening, we send that crew to go relieve overtime in the evening. We believe we could bring the cost of that apparatus down from $400,000 to around $280,000 because it would be reducing overtime. If there's not any overtime, they stay in service and they continue to serve as a 24-hour rescue. I think it would be a fantastic pilot. It's in addition to, not replacing or not reducing. And it would be a good opportunity to get some good data and provide some benefits to the much-needed benefits to the community.
Question on that, Chief. If it is a peak staffing model, are you concerned about collective bargaining
for doing that pilot program?
We generally can enter into conversations with Local 43 and discuss some type of an ad, and doing a pilot is a little bit easier to do.
I want to echo Don's comments about the excellence of the discussion of the other initiatives that you're undertaking, particularly with regards to healthcare. I don't see anything in there about particularly focusing on healthcare for people experiencing mental health crises. Oh. And so that was something that I was hoping to get a report on. And I want to speak to the fire commissioner that as we're recruiting somebody to attempt to take over from Chief Jensen's, I think that's going to be really difficult. I'd like to see in the recruitment process a heavy emphasis on medical care, because that is the bulk of what the Fire Bureau does, mm-hmm. and that we need somebody as a new chief who, like Chief Jensen's, really understands the medical issues and how the whole system needs to become a system rather mm-hmm. than the disjointed, mm-hmm. and particularly how can fire help with the 20% of our community experiencing mental health challenges in a variety of ways that would mean fewer interactions with our police.
Mm-hmm. I apologize, Commissioner Fritz, because I know that that is definitely something that you've brought up, and I was going to report back to you on that. We should have included something in the budget about that. Chief Burns has been very actively engaged with Unity Hospital and participant on several task forces. That has been, in the back of my mind, something that we perhaps keep the RRVs somewhat available or fluid for, that they may have the opportunity in the future to help alleviate some of those calls, and perhaps we find a way to get people over to Unity and be part of that solution.
And if you're not ready to do the formal report to council before you leave, I'd really like to get an in-depth briefing, maybe an hour or so with you and your staff and Commissioner Saltzman, just to understand how could firefighters be even more part of the system.
Sure.
Thank you.
Happy to do that.
Restoring the 13 positions that would be lost due to the SAFER grant, and also to continue to do innovations in the rapid response vehicle services. I do think the pilot the chief has proposed is something I do hope we will be able to pursue. And I also want to thank the budget office for taking the rapid response vehicle program and making it subject to your government accountability, transparency, and results, or GATOR. I think it's been was a very productive exercise for the mayor and I to sit down with the fire professionals in the budget office and sort of brainstorm collectively how we can make the rapid response vehicle program serve the greater needs of our city. And I do think, you know, just in closing, my mic was off, but I did want to once again thank the budget committee. But I do think, you know, this bureau is comprised of very talented professionals. That is the resource we have. We have some rolling stock, too. Yeah, that's important. But it's really the people of the Portland Fire and Rescue that really help us to be the great bureau that it is. But I do think the potential is literally unlimited. And, yes, Commissioner Fritz, you can be assured that knowledge and familiarity with medical issues will be a big criterion in the selection of the new next fire chief. But I do think there's so much room to innovate, and there's so much desire, because we all realize that our healthcare system is a mess, and we have these talented professionals that are they're healthcare professionals, they're firefighting professionals, and we need to figure out ways to have them work with the residents of our city everywhere to make sure that they are safe from tragic fire deaths, safe from losing property, and that's the stuff that we're going to continue to try to push the envelope on. So. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you. Oh, Frieda? Yes, please.
I've kept quiet because I really don't have any questions, because I've gone through your budget and I understand the importance of this department and how they serve us. I really want to stress that I really like your collaborative approach with Gresham. We have found it, David Douglas, as funds got cut, by collaborating with the other school districts, we've been able to save a lot, but also produce more. In regard to the zero-based budgeting, I'm total agreement on. I feel that every department every so often should be looking at innovative ways and programs they have if they've no longer serve their purpose. But in departments, it could be processes with technology they can improve. I know when Douglas had to cut 100 teachers, our new superintendent, he had a fresh set of eyes, went through every single program. There was a lot of programs that we were just doing but not having results, and we ended up changing programs or how we did things. And as you know from news reports, we're getting tremendous results by doing that. So I think it's a good exercise for every bureau to look at, because things change. And maybe as a retired person, you think I wouldn't be for change, but it actually is one of my pet things that you need to look at change, especially with the change in technology, how you can become more efficient. But I kudos to you for the collaboration, because I think there's more we can do within the city collaborating with our entities around us.
Okay, thank you all. Let's take a true 5-minute break, and we'll queue up the police bureau at 20 after.
That's what the cloud is for, right?
You're the most fervent about it.
Yesterday we were got to do the welcome to the event, and we got to go outside of the mat, see what the field looked like from the map.
Yeah.
And then the thorns came out to practice, so I was actually showing some of our foreign villagers the video of Michelle Bates scoring a
dead
ball. Yeah,
no,
it was
fantastic.
Bragging rights.
Breaking news, Yale beat Baylor.
Okay. Ah, all right.
Well, in Obama,
so does. So does.
Yeah, he's. All right, from that lofty subject to the next. Welcome to the Police Bureau. Chief, I think we're just going to simply turn it over to you and your team for a presentation and then have a little point-counterpoint from the CBO and then open it up for discussion with us and with our advisors. So welcome.
Thank you. I thought it was St. Patrick's Day. We're here for the pot of gold today, so good to see smiling faces. I thought that's why we're scheduled this day. Chief Larry O'Day, for the record, and thank you for this opportunity. I want to start by thanking CBO and budget analyst Christy Owen for the significant time that she has spent learning the Police Bureau. I also want to thank Andrew Scott for his monthly meetings with us. This has been the most challenging year that I've seen for the Portland Police Bureau in the 30 years that I've been there. Some of the challenges include hiring and staffing crisis that is going to get worse before it gets better, Department of Justice mandates that we must achieve, and increasing community expectations regarding policing strategies, sexual assault investigations, and accountability. The Bureau was required to submit a 5% cut package as part of the 16-17 budget process. A 5% cut to the Bureau equates to approximately $8.3 million in about 84 positions. The Bureau has become very lean over the years, and our current authorized strength is inadequate for the demands of the work. The Matrix staffing study, which was mandated following the 13-14 budget process, said the Bureau is too lean and recommended adding positions. We need to be discussing strategically adding positions to the Bureau over the next few years, as opposed to cutting them. The staffing crisis took several years to happen and will take several years for us to correct. The mandatory cuts to the Police Bureau's positions over the years have left us with few options that allow us to still preserve our core emergency patrol response and our core investigative functions. A 5% cut essentially eliminates all of our major specialty units, short of the gang enforcement team. Gang gun crime spiked in January of 2015 and has continued. We moved positions from patrol that we didn't have to spare to better support that work. A 5% cut eliminates the Youth Services Division, the Traffic Division, and the Family Services Division. The work does not disappear, though, and generally will fall to patrol to manage as best as possible. This will have significant impacts as these specialty units have all developed and survived over time, as their work is a critical priority for the Bureau and for the community. The Youth Services Division and Family Services Division protect and investigate our most vulnerable population, to include our youth, the elderly, and victims of domestic violence. Every year, these divisions are protecting people and saving lives. The role of the Traffic Division is critical in helping to reduce traffic fatalities. Portland prides itself on a progressive multimodal transportation system that includes vehicles, bicycles, pedestrians, trains, buses, streetcar system, and the tram. The Traffic Division fulfills a critical function of enforcement and education in the engineering, education, and enforcement paradigm of traffic safety. Historically, the Traffic Division does about 75% of the Bureau's citations and warnings, with self-initiated street crime by patrol officers now at a minimum because of staffing. Traffic now does approximately 90% of these. We should be talking about restoring a night shift to the Traffic Division, not cutting them in light of the city's commitment to Vision Zero and the recent legalization of marijuana. We've already experienced our first marijuana-related traffic fatality since its legalization. The elimination of the Traffic Division also significantly impacts the Bureau's ability to facilitate special events and candidate visits. I'm going to talk now a little bit about our hiring and staffing crisis. The Bureau lost 55 positions in the 13-14 budget process. We couldn't hire for more than a year, so we returned the bulk of our background investigators to patrol. My most critical request is to add 15 background investigators and a supervisor back to the personnel division to support the massive hiring that we will be doing for the next several years.
I'm also asking for an equity and diversity program specialist to support our goals in hiring, educating, and training a diverse workforce reflective of community desires, our Department of Justice discussions, and the principles of 21st century policing. The Bureau's made huge strides in our equity work. This investment offers us an opportunity to shape the workforce of the Bureau during a time where we will be replacing one-third of the sworn members of the organization. The next 3 years represent an increase in the number of sworn members eligible to retire. This traces back to the city's efforts to staff the police bureau to 2.2 officers per 1,000 for the original community policing conversation. These people are now eligible to retire, and we are now staffed at 1.5 officers per 1,000, and that's only when we're at our full authorized strength. Currently, we are down 45 sworn positions and have an additional 90 sworn members eligible to retire by the end of this fiscal year. Hiring and retaining retirement-eligible members is my top priority. In the post-Ferguson era, it is much more of a challenge to recruit and to retain sworn members in the profession. This is an issue here, statewide, and nationwide. We are all competing for a smaller pool of people interested in this profession at this time. There is also a sworn officer recruitment incentives decision package in our budget request to help make us more competitive with other departments in this new era. The non-sworn backgrounder and supervisor budget request is critical. If we are not budgeted for this additional work, I will be forced to staff to this number by pulling sworn positions that I don't have to spare from such critical work as the walking beat, the Family Services Division, and the Traffic Division. There are several positions that we're looking at to civilianize and return sworn members to the street. These include the Fleet Coordinator. This change is also recommended by the Matrix Report. We're also looking to civilianize the complaint signer positions to return 2 sworn members to the street. And we're asking to restore the 6 NERC positions that were moved to the gang enforcement team. I'm going to talk now about some of the Department of Justice mandates that impact our staffing. One of the requirements of the Department of Justice settlement agreement is that all internal investigations be completed within 180 days. In February of last year, I gave clear direction to our organization to prioritize this work. With everybody being diligent, the only area within the Bureau unable to meet the timetable was professional standards. This was due to inadequate resources for the work. Additionally, changes in IPR that are mandated by the Department of Justice are coming shortly and will result in more investigations being done by the Police Bureau, furthering that workload. To meet this requirement, the Bureau requires 2 additional investigators and an administrative support position. Going to talk some about community expectations and how that impacts us. Last year, the Bureau applied for and received a grant to test all sexual assault forensic evidence kits. We also changed our testing criteria last year to require all future kits be tested. This is part of a nationwide and local demand by communities requesting improved law enforcement response to this crime. This year, the state also passed legislation mandating all law enforcement agencies to do essentially the same thing. This additional testing will result in the need for more follow-up investigations and more arrests. The Bureau is requesting 2 new detective positions and a non-sworn support position to assist with this additional work. The Matrix study recommended 2 additional detectives in the Sex Crimes Unit just to properly investigate the current volume of cases prior to this additional workload change. The Bureau is also requesting consideration for a refugee community engagement specialist specifically to work with the Somali community. Portland is one of the largest destination cities for the Somali immigrants and refugees, and I believe we are still the number 3 destination site in the country. This population is the most in need for structured specific assistance, as they're at the bottom when it comes to poverty levels, education, and employment. This makes this group susceptible to being victims of all manner of crime and of the youth turning to criminal activity to survive. This position will focus on youth engagement to prevent criminal involvement, gang membership and association, and radicalization. It will also focus on educating the Somali community about their civil rights, about laws, and help to continue building a relationship with law enforcement and city government. We sent two Bureau members to Minnesota last year to study what was successful for them, as they have an even larger population. I believe they're still the number one destiny in the country, and they've struggled with this for years before getting a handle on it. They said it was critical to have a trusted community member working directly for the department to specifically be engaged full-time with the community and the police. This model is strongly supported and requested by Somali leaders here in the city. Overall, something that we have seen here the last couple years is the demand by the community to have officers out of their car doing bike and foot patrol. This has been especially effective downtown in the Hawthorne area, the Gateway District, Albion and Killingsworth, and other areas. No longer is it okay with the community to simply run call to call in a car, rapidly managing calls. We are also seeing this demand nationwide in the post-Ferguson era. Communities want to see and know their police and have a relationship with them. We're very good at this when we have the resources to do this. We were invited back to the White House last year for our work in the Walking Beats, as well as being mentioned by the United States Attorney General Loretta Lynch in her visit here 2 weeks ago. Our officers reduce people's fear of crime by being out there, and they build relationships. Their presence and their work improve the quality of the areas they work. They connect people with services and help create safe and healthy neighborhoods, all without a skyrocketing number of arrests. This type of foot patrol is needed and wanted by us and by the community. It is so desired and so effective that it is becoming a core part of patrol operations, as valuable and as important as taking radio calls for service. However, it takes more resources to do this. Yesterday, the arbiter came back with a ruling on the 27 pay period grievance. It returns the 27 pay period retirement immediately. April, which is next month and 2 weeks away, and October are the next two time periods where there is this financial incentive for members to retire. We can expect this to further worsen our already critical staffing crisis. We now have the fewest number of patrol officers working the street in all the time that I've been tracking the numbers, and that has been for more than 10 years. The Bureau has done everything in its power within existing resources to staff efficiently around the work, and now we need your help. We permanently moved 11 positions back to patrol from fiscal services, strategic services, and the Drugs and Vice Division, making these units very lean. We have added two additional shifts to our traditional three patrol shifts. This staffs us more efficiently around the work, but is less family-friendly. Also, every officer who is not assigned to patrol now spends a portion of their pay period rotating in from their specialty unit or function and working patrol shifts, frequently on a different shift from which they are regularly assigned. This has been very disruptive for the involved members and their families, as well as for the specialty units and their stakeholders. These efficiencies help make the best use of what we have, but they are not the solution. Eventually, the effectiveness of rotational support will reach its limit, and we'll have to begin suspending specialty functions and units. The answer is we need more people. Without more resources coming in the door than are going out, we will continue to move toward a Bureau which only has the ability to conduct core patrol operations and core major investigations. I know you have a very difficult job in balancing the huge and competing financial needs of the city. I suspect it is one of your biggest challenges and certainly one of your biggest responsibilities. The Police Bureau will continue to do our job to the best of our abilities with whatever level we are resourced at. Thank you, and I would now like to introduce Mr. George Weatheroy, who is a member of the Police Bureau's Budget Advisory Committee.
Hello, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I have my favorite green suit on for the day. And I just want to take a couple of moments to emphasize a few things that the Chief spoke about. And I do want to let you know, I do have a bias. I was a police officer in Portland for 25 years, and I'm currently the Director of Security for Portland Public Schools. So it's been an honor to be on the Budget Advisory Committee. The concern that he briefly spoke about in regards to the staffing crisis has reached an almost terminal point. not only do we barely have enough officers out on the street, but it's almost nearly impossible for those officers to build the relationships that they need to build in order to accomplish the goals that the chief has. Since the post-Ferguson era, there has been, just honestly speaking, a lot of questions about the trust of law enforcement. And rebuilding that trust doesn't take effect with emails and text. It really takes effect best and most effectively in face-to-face interactions. And a lot of the officers are constantly going from one call to another, and they don't have that opportunity to take the time necessary to work on the relationships. And then we also know in our communities of color, in our poor communities, there's also a question about trust, and they want to get to know the officers, and I think the officers want to get to know the community. So recruiting, hiring, and retainment, and relationship building are all interconnected to me. And when the Bureau has to even do an exercise, which is common, you know, the 5% exercise, it impacts the ability to recruit and to hire and retain. And I say that because as many people as the Bureau needs, it's hard to tell someone, hey, give up your job and come move to Portland when you think there might be potential layoffs coming up. And so it's a very difficult decision that you guys and everyone has to make. But I really do believe that it's critical that we work on relationship building and recruiting people that are reflective of the community that they serve. And that's really been a challenge for the Bureau. The Bureau has put out the welcome mat for all of the colors of the rainbow. But in the post-Ferguson era, once again, it's been very difficult because it's hard to overcome the trust issues in those communities. And so my father was a police officer for Portland from 1950 to 1982. And I believe when he retired in 82, there were approximately low 40s of black officers. And now those numbers are even less than in 1982. And so that's another challenge. And then having the DOJ and having the pressures of expectations by the community, it's created a very difficult situation to, once again, recruit, hire, and retain. And then lastly, I just want to talk about when I retired as a sergeant, 2012, one of the things I've always learned is the importance of morale. And the current staffing levels and the adjustments that the creative ways they've had to do to provide the minimum levels of staffing has really severely impacted the morale of officers. And so I just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Chief, Catherine, anything else you want to cover?
No.
Okay. Christy.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. We definitely recognize the staffing crisis that the Police Bureau is in. One of the things when we looked at the Bureau's request and overall outcomes are more than just ratios. It is what is that outcome and what is the expected investment going to yield. So when we take in totality the number of officers that would benefit community policing in the city of Portland, that ultimate outcome is one of the key things that we look at in the budget office. So In recognizing that, we do recommend some of the funding for the for the civilianization of the background investigators. This will help with the recruitment and the bringing on board new resources to fill the potential retirements. At the time when we wrote the review, it was estimated that there was the potential for 90 members to be eligible for retirement as of June 30. It sounds like with the decision from yesterday, the potential for more retirees to actually separate from the city is greater than when we first looked at it. Knowing that it takes a long time to recruit, hire, train, and pass initial probation, the chief has been proactive in doing what it takes to have patrol resources available. We are not able to recommend full funding without either finding additional cuts outside of the police bureau or within the police bureau. And we also do want to make sure that we have the correct process for the number of recruits coming in. We recommend a recruiter, and we do recommend that the program manager for this very critical function be a non-sworn manager. The Bureau did request it as sworn. This is a largely civilian work group, and it looked like that there might be a greater need for sworn resources in other areas instead of pulling a sworn member to supervise this new unit. We also recommend funding for the second recruitment incentive package, which is to raise entry-level wages for newly hired officers. So when we did a review of what are other West Coast cities, both large city and suburban communities, what is the entry-level officer rate, and Portland's entry-level officer rate was a significant amount less. We do realize that this requires bargaining for changing any wages or benefits, but if it is something to have a recruit who often would apply for different jobs with different jurisdictions, to not have money as being the factor on why would you want to come here. If money is largely comparable or a little bit above, what else would make someone want to be an officer at the City of Portland? Some of the other packages we do recommend, just real quickly, we do recommend for the detectives and the victims advocate in the sex crimes unit. We do recommend for the internal affairs investigation positions and the support for that. These are pretty critical functions that are not being able to be achieved right now, either on the investigations of sex assault or on the terms of the U.S. DOJ agreement, which is something that the city is responsible for. We do recommend for the funding for the community engagement with the Somali community. I also talked with Minnesota and with the sergeants in charge. This model has been recognized by the President's 21st Century Task Force. They have received a lot of accolade for not only engaging with a vulnerable community, but it also has had an impact in crime reduction in these areas. The Somali population in Minnesota is approximately 100,000 people. So having a non-sworn support unit that has an impact on crime also seems like it could be something that could be very beneficial for a bureau that is in a staffing crisis right now with sworn resources going to the call volume coming from 911. We do not recommend for a couple of the other requests for the NERT officers. Some of this is just due to resources being available to make the recommendation and to the ability for the Bureau to be able to staff the NERT officers while still maintaining patrol services with the level that they are at. We did not recommend full funding for ongoing support for the body camera program. That was also requested by the Bureau. This program, based on what other cities of similar size have entered into, would cost anywhere from $800,000 to potentially more than that, depending on the vendor selected, the modes of data storage, and how many officers are deployed with cameras.
Ongoing.
It would be ongoing. And in order to make this kind of a recommendation, we would either need to know, find that a reduction in another bureau based on the limited resources or within the own bureau. And that even without going for an RFP, we would just want to know what that funding source would be before the Bureau would continue forward. I'm trying to think of the
offsets.
Oh, there's the offsets, yes. The offsets, the 5%. We did not recommend reducing the Family Services Division or traffic enforcement. These specialty units, the work would not go away, as the chief said. The work would fall to patrol, which means it would further be backlogged by having resources available to address those calls or having the dedicated specialty officer or detective positions in Family Services that are very in touch with what is going on with these vulnerable communities or situations that would require extra extra efforts. We do recommend that the Youth Services Division seek to have a revenue backing from Portland Public Schools for providing services at the school resource officers. We do know that this is a pretty significant ask. It's a $2 million package that would require this change in funding. Three primary reasons for this. City financial policies do look towards having cost recovery for services. The matrix recommendation also came back saying that the Bureau should have cost recovery for the SROs, and that is consistent with other jurisdictions that they have done these reviews on. And when I did a quick survey of local school districts in Oregon, there were some that had full cost recovery, and there were such as Gresham. And then there was Salem Kaiser and Tigard-Tualatin, where they have a partial cost recovery model, where it is 50% of the cost of the program for 9.5 months of the year. So there's a wide range of options. And then there are other communities that do not have a reimbursement model, such as Beaverton. So it really, is up to the partner agencies on what they would like to pursue for cost sharing.
So what's the net effect on the police budget if your recommendations, is it positive, negative, compared with the current budget?
The net effect, I believe, is almost neutral because...
Yeah, it's about $100,000 in total. We recommend about $2.1 million in additions and then a $1.9 million offset by additional revenue from Portland Public Schools.
And just going back to the equity position, I know... The Police Bureau, I believe, was the only position that we have funded the equity manager with an additional appropriation as well as the FTE. So I certainly support the City Budget Office's recommendation to add the FTE, but direct you to find it within existing resources. That's what the other five bureaus have done. And it seems to me if we're all prioritizing equity that we need to prioritize equity within our own funding rather than expecting it to be an add.
Thank you, Commissioner. I forgot about that one.
It wouldn't be a budget session if this issue didn't come up every year, and that is.
I think I know
it. Second.
So how can you really, Chief? And I understand you're going through tough times, but how can you, with a straight face, recommend eliminating the Family Services Division over the Mounted Patrol?
A 5% cut for the Police Bureau is over $8 million. Mounted Patrol is four officers and a sergeant, where no other place in the city am I aware of do you have a group like Friends of Mounted Patrol, who have raised $200,000 twice now for the Bureau. So we're essentially just funding those salaries. So, four officers and a sergeant is a minimal impact on a 5% cut package, and it's the one unit in the Bureau that is working full-time on our most number one complaint with livability issues out on the street.
You can look at everything and sort of say, that's not much, but, it's four officers, and, what is Family Services Division? It's probably 19, okay, so... I think the point still remains. I view them out of patrol, and I'm heartened to hear you say they're working on livability issues. I guess I'd like to also have a follow-up discussion about dedicating them between April 1st and the end of October to doing nothing else but patrolling an axis between the park blocks and Waterfront Park. I never see them, and I know we don't want a meltdown like happened last summer in the North Park blocks. So... can you commit that the Mounted Patrol will exclusively patrol the park blocks and Waterfront Park and the strip in between from April through the end of October?
The Mounted Patrol spends now 100% of their time now in the downtown area, and I would be glad to have conversations with you about prioritizing that work.
Where are the horses these days? Where do they actually stay at night?
They're in Lake Oswego. And then they truck them in here, and we're using the fire station as their offloading point.
So I guess I would like a, you know, like I said, I think there's enough votes up here to assure that Family Services Division will not disappear. And if it's there's an effort, if it's a serious effort, that the Matter Patrol will go first. But second, I would like an assurance that they will dedicate themselves, as I said, to patrolling. Because, you know, it's one thing to say that that's what they're doing, but, you know, just my anecdotal evidence is I never see them out of patrol. And I think a lot of people here have the same experience. So I want some evidence that they're actually patrolling, as I said, the park blocks and Waterfront Park and the areas in between from April 1st through the end of October at a minimum.
Well, I've been expressing a similar priority to the chief, so he heard that message. Actually, right now they're at Pioneer Courthouse Square because they do also, I saw them, they do special duty for special situations.
Yeah, they always
like
show
that.
Up at Timbers games too.
And no, this is because we have to close a lane there, and we don't normally close a lane on the transit mall. So it's a good way to do that, but I think that I hear you and I agree with you about the need to focus on the park blocks and Waterfront Park.
All four horses heading east on the Morrison Bridge. What would they have been doing having two pairs of officers? Although, yes, but why?
That's where they go to offload. So at the beginning of the day, they start there and they walk over. At the end of the day, they have to walk back, take all their gear off, put the horses in the truck, and take them to Lake Oswego.
And what's the plan for for the Mounted Patrol down by the riverfront by Centennial Mills?
That's still a plan that's in the works.
But there's a specific budget note that said that the council has to approve any improvements there.
We don't know what they are yet. We're working on developing that budget, and then we would figure out what we needed from there.
And how much has the Mounted Patrol, Friends of Mounted Patrol, given us in the past budget year?
How much is it costing us?
How much has the Friends raised in the last year?
We have a $200,000 from 2 years ago and from this current year.
They've raised $200,000 this current year?
Yes.
And how much does it cost to feed and care for the horses?
It costs us about $150,000 to operate that program without salaries.
I'd be interested also in knowing what the cost would be down in Centennial Mills, because I'm just reading the tea leaves on this council. I'm not sure you have the votes for that expenditure, and I don't know what the council is going to look like next year, but the trade winds may not even be going in your direction on that. So if you're looking at an allocation of urban renewal dollars, for example, for some structure, I think we should have that conversation sooner rather than later. Chief, I want to ask you a different question, and that has to do with Vision Zero, which we've had a lot of conversations about here at council. And I want to liberate you for a moment from the constraints of this budget exercise and just ask you to wear your other hat, which is, if money was not the prime consideration, what are we not doing now at the Bureau in terms of enforcement that you would like to see to help further the goal of Vision Zero, which is citywide policy? And by that I mean, we've been told that part of Vision Zero is education. I'm all for education. Part of it is encouragement. I'm all for encouragement. But part of it is enforcement. So what are we not doing on the enforcement side that you'd like to see more of?
Thank you, Commissioner. I was the captain of the traffic division in 2008 and spent a lot of time learning that work there. At that time, we had a night shift traffic division. Because of budget cuts over the years, we've lost the ability to staff a night shift traffic division. So our biggest gap right now, and especially concerning also now with the addition of the legalization of marijuana, is the ability to staff a night shift, having a night shift so that we have full coverage for traffic enforcement.
What else is the budget for traffic enforcement?
Well, we would be robustly sending our folks to training around the much harder to prosecute, to process a marijuana-related DUII investigation. We have a small number of officers who are DRE certified, drug recognition expert certified. That is a difficult certification to get. It's a couple weeks school and it has annual maintenance, but I would push for having the time and funds to send those folks to that training.
Chief, I don't know to what extent legalization of marijuana is exacerbating the problem. I guess you're going to have impaired driving. That's, I guess, intuitive. But I'm not sure there's a correlation between, you know, marijuana consumption or drinking and some of the speeding that's going on, and also some of the unsafe driving, people going through distracted drive. That's Dan's pet peeve, and is the distracted driving, people on their cell phones. I thought it was interesting the study in the Tribune recently that something like 3/4 of the drivers confess to engaging in dangerous behavior, self-reported. But I mean, what about that? The stuff in intersections, the speeding, and the other kind of dangerous driving. What if you had additional resources? How would you tackle that and further Vision Zero?
Almost all of the traffic division work is mission oriented, so it isn't a matter of officers just going out and patrolling an area and doing stopping violators. Almost all of it is structured as specific missions in specific areas to address specific behavior. One of the things that's been impacted substantially this last year has been traffic division officers are also part of helping out and rotationally being assigned to work patrol shifts as well as take calls during their regular traffic shift. So that has impacted some of their ability to address those types of behaviors.
And Chief, could you remind me, would it make a difference if we had a municipal court?
Municipal court would give you the advantage of generating revenue on the citations that you're getting.
And then the other question I wanted to ask you, you've reported to us an uptick in heroin use and a trend line that's not good. I actually saw a documentary on TV not long ago that sort of chronicled the amount of heroin coming into our community on the I-5 corridor and some of the enforcement work we're involved with. How has that increase in heroin use impacted our policing? And again, with taking you out of the framework of the 5% cut package, what additional things could we be doing to get in front of that epidemic?
Thank you. When I first was hired in the mid-80s, heroin was the drug of choice that was impacting the quality of our city. And that changed in 1988 with the appearance of crack cocaine, and overnight that changed. The resurgence we're seeing now is very specific, and it is tied really to an epidemic of people getting hooked on prescription painkillers and then essentially playing out all the doctor visits they can, ER visits they can, and then once they're no longer able to get any more prescription pills, you know, they turn to heroin. We see that throughout our city manifested in a lot of different ways. Talking to some of the people who have become addicted, they end up having to sell their possessions. Sometimes they're out then part of our homeless population. And we're encountering them there as well. So part of the holistic strategy in approaching that, and that work is beginning to being done, is the medical service providers all having a united database to be able to access and be able to see, are some of these people coming in trying to get these prescriptions? Is it clear from their history on what they're doing? So there's a piece beyond enforcement as well. Our ability's been somewhat impacted this year because